This is a Times Online podcast.
The Bugle, audio newspaper for a visual world.
Hello, Buglers, and welcome to issue 42 of The Bugle, the world's leading and only audio newspaper for a visual world, for the week beginning Monday, the 25th of August, 2008, with me, Andy Zaltzman, in the Scottish capital of Edinburgh, and in New York City, John Oliver.
Hello, Andy. Hello, Buglers. Andy, I'm not going to lie to you, you sound terrible.
Yeah, I'm not feeling too good, mate. No, I've been doing three shows a day for the last 3 weeks.
Spaced wow, that's over... basically like being a coal miner, isn't it, Andy?
I've got spaced so over 12 hours of a day. I mean, no one should have to work in these conditions, John. Must be some kind of convention about it. I've been doing up to 3 hours work a day, and that is inhuman.
No, you're like an Indonesian 6-year-old.
I am, but more so. Because, you know, at least they don't know what they're missing.
I am, Andy, off tomorrow morning to the Democratic National Convention. And in fact, the Bugle will be live from the conventions over the next 2 weeks, by which I'll probably mean live from my hotel room at 6 a.m. But the point stands, the atmosphere will still be incredible.
There will be just a buzz of democracy over the next couple of weeks of Bugles. So this being the week beginning the 25th of August means that it is the anniversary of the 1835 Great Moon Hoax in the New York Sun newspaper, John. Articles claiming that they had found life on the moon, including such far-fetched inventions as unicorns, bat-like humanoids, and, wait for it, goats. Though we now know that these articles from 1835 were, in all probability, a hoax. We don't know for sure yet. You know, we've seen bits of the moon, not all of the moon. The interest sparked by the articles led to the foundation of NASA just 123 years later. And when Big Neil Armstrong landed on the moon, he was initially dressed as a goat to try and blend in with the locals. And Buzz Aldrin was later hired to make contact with the moon-based Batman. When the Apollo landed and it turned out the 1835 articles were nothing but bullshit, Armstrong and Aldrin quickly changed into spaceman costumes, and the rest is probably history. But if you listen carefully, you can hear the disappointment in their voices. As always, some sections of the Bugle go straight to the min. This week, a modern lifestyle section, including we discuss what the best place to break bad news to someone is. Is it at a football match, whilst scuba diving, or in the leopard enclosure of a zoo? Which one would you go for out of those, John?
Scuba diving, Andy, scuba diving. You want to do it on signs with waterproof ink.
It just takes the tension out of a situation if you think you're about to be eaten by a shark.
That's right, because if the other person starts getting depressed, they can just look at some beautiful coral.
Also, how to tell when you have too much furniture. The question to ask is, can you still get in and out of your house? If yes, it's probably fine. And if you can only afford one luxury item for your new home, what should it be? An aquarium, a trampoline, or a roof?
Top story this week...
Bugle update.
That's right, here are a series of Bugle updates for what is going on in the world at the moment. First off, Georgia update. And Russian President... Dmitry Medvedev, you really have to put audio inverted commas around the word president, had pledged his forces would pull back from Georgia by Friday, but Russian troops have appeared to be in no hurry to fulfil their treaty-bound obligation this week, even settling down in strategic spots and building fortifications. And this has raised concerns over whether Moscow is aiming at a lengthy occupation. But Andy, you can't rush these withdrawals. Nation alterations are just like building alterations. Do you want it done quickly? Or do you want it done right? We're proving that with Iraq. No one could accuse us of rushing over there. That is almost the one thing you cannot criticise us for, doing it too quickly. And you don't want to make a mistake with withdrawing from a nation that you shouldn't be in the first place. You have to do it correctly. Make absolutely sure that you're heading in the right direction, for instance. You know, maybe the Russian compasses are broken, or they're having sat-nav problems. Maybe one of their tanks has got a puncture. We don't know.
Well, Britain, of course, made a lot of mistakes when it withdrew from countries that it occupied at the end of Empire, John, and as a result, people are still quite stroppy with us. So maybe, you know, the Russians have learnt from our mistakes, and once again, Britain has left a glorious legacy of peace to the world.
Well, that's a glass-half-full interpretation, Andy. Congratulations.
Well, I'm trying to be more optimistic now. I've always thought the glass is half-empty. I now do think the glass is half-full of piss. But, you know, it's a step in the right direction. But I've been trying my hardest not to think about Georgia, John, because it's miles away and neither country involved is a major cricket-playing nation, so it doesn't really affect my life.
You're up against it.
Although I do have a bit of a link to it, John, because I once ate an egg near the Russian-Georgian border. That is a fact.
When did you do that? When did you eat that ceremonial egg?
It was 1996, the summer of 96, right. Since when things have really gone tits up. And I was in the Russian Caucasus and I ate an egg. And I'm starting to feel slightly guilty about that, given what's now happened.
Do you think you eating that egg on the border, do you think it helped or hindered this situation?
Well, I mean, the evidence would suggest that it hasn't helped. I mean, whether it contributed directly to the current conflict, you know, I'm not a historian. I'll leave that for the history books to judge. All I'm saying is, I ate an egg near the Russian-Georgian border, and now look. Okay, I'll go to The Hague next week, and I'll try and clear it up. I'm sorry.
Who are we to blame the Russian troops? You know, it's summer. They're allowed to enjoy the clement weather over there, drinking the lovely scorched Georgian scenery. You know, maybe have a picnic. And yes, we all know picnics can often lead to the building of military bases. It happens. Some Ossetians don't want to live side by side with Georgians anymore. One man, Alan Dedurov, 46, said, "It's not they, it's we who will erase them from the face of the earth." Well, thank you, Alan Dedurov, 46. That's an extremely helpful thing to say. Had you thought about going into international relations? I know that at 46 it may seem a little late for a major career change. I just wouldn't want to see that kind of diplomatic talent go to waste. You've got a gift, Alan, 46. Don't let it wither on the vine.
I don't know, John. I think you're being a bit harsh on Alan, 46, because I think, you know, he just gets nervous in front of the cameras. He's, you know, off camera, he's a really lovely guy.
Well, what are the opposition? How is maverick Georgian leader Saakashvili holding up? Well, he was caught on camera just before one interview this week, eating his own tie while it was still around his neck. This is true. Now, and it's unclear as to what he was doing. Was it nerves? You know, was it a bet? You know, had he said to someone, "If we get invaded by Russians, I'll eat my own tie"? Or was it more unpleasantly him trying to hang himself in a new and difficult way? Eating the tie until it ties tightly around his neck, asphyxiating himself with his own stomach muscles.
I think maybe it was a satirical comment, John, but showing that, you know, there's a lot of ties that bind in international politics. And he was merely suggesting that if we can get rid of some of those ties by eating them or in another way, maybe the world would be a looser place and a more friendly place. So really it was a potent message to the world. Although it could just have been a man going mad and eating his own tie. Bugle update.
Iraq update now, and Iraq's foreign minister has said that Iraq and the US are very close to a deal on the future of US forces in Iraq. Key points yet to be resolved are US troops' immunity from prosecution and the timing of the pullout. So those are two pretty key points there. Keys that would probably be necessary to start the ignition on the bus out of there. But the idea seems to be that US troops will try to withdraw from major Iraqi cities to large bases out of public view by next summer. So it's not so much leaving Iraq as leaving where they can be seen in Iraq. They're going to try the old out-of-sight, out-of-mind approach. It's the equivalent of toddlers playing hide-and-seek by putting their hands over their eyes. If I can't see you, you can't see me. Condoleezza Rice said that any aspirational timeline for a US withdrawal had to take into consideration the situation on the ground, which is almost word for word what Putin had just said about Georgia. They are really going to want to play down those parallels, Andy, if they want to keep seeming annoyed about it. She then went on to say that she's looking for closure in Iraq, and rightly so, Andy. It has been a bad relationship, ill-advised from the start. Everyone said we shouldn't get involved, that we just weren't right for each other, that we'd already tried a brief fling in the 90s, but that Iraq might be looking for something a lot more serious now. But the heart wants what the heart wants, Andy. Maybe it's best for us to go our separate ways for now, until they give us the eye in another decade and we go ploughing back in there. We're like Elizabeth Taylor and Richard Burton. It's a tempestuous relationship, but you cannot deny the chemistry.
And Iraq has got huge tits. Oil reserves. Sorry. Yeah, it's a fine line.
And a final sticking point is what to do with the 20,000 Iraqi prisoners who are being held there without trial. And Camp Buka hosts 18,000 of those. And a US soldier has recently claimed that there is inadequate healthcare provision there. He said he'd had 4 months medical training in total. And That really doesn't seem enough, Andy, even factoring in the possibility that he may be a fast learner. He could be as quick a reader as Johnny Five, the robot in Short Circuit. I still think he's likely to be left with some key gaps in his knowledge.
I don't know. I think medicine is mostly luck, John. It's like with sport, you know, a player will be really brilliant at the start of their careers and then people will work him out and it'll be less successful. I think the same's true with medicine. You know, you might fluke a few really good operations early on, but then your patients get wise to it and it just gets tougher. But I guess this is positive news, John, that we are at last looking to pull out, because the Iraqis still haven't really welcomed us in as the liberating heroes that we initially promoted ourselves as quite aggressively. Because I guess the Iraqis have welcomed the British and American military very much as you would probably welcome an arsonist who set fire to your house, watched it burn for a bit, then bravely went in, put out some of the fire, and rescued one of your two cats, before emerging triumphantly saying, "Rejoice, I have saved your only cat." To which you would probably respond, "No, I actually had two cats." And they would say, "You have one cat." And you would then say, "Look, you've just burnt my house to the ground." And they would say, "Well, rejoice, I have saved your only cat." And you might then say, "Is there any chance you can maybe build my house again?" And they would say, "Oh, look, he's purring." Bugle update. Pakistan update now, John, and Pervez Musharraf, a Bugle favourite over the last year or so, has resigned to avoid impeachment. Now, impeachment does sound like quite a lot of fun, but I do like peaches.
Andy, that's where you're getting confused. Impeachment isn't like having a peach cobbler. So don't ever make that mistake, that's what I'm saying.
I thought it was like being surrounded by a giant peach, but it obviously isn't that. Musharraf's been accused of violation of the constitution and gross misconduct. Lovely little twosome there. And he has resigned. And Condoleezza Rice praised Musharraf as he left office as a friend of the United States and one of the world's most committed partners in the war against terrorism and extremism. A great Democrat, Musharraf. He came to power in a military coup d'etat, suspended the constitution twice, jailed key figures in the legal system, was voted in as president after an election with a turnout of only one, namely himself. Well, shades of when I voted myself Emperor of all the Europes, John, a title to which I cling despite a lack of recognition from the international community and pressure from my wife to tidy my office. But, you know, there's a time and a place for everything, and we'll miss him. We'll miss him at the Bugle. A recent poll showed that Musharraf is, in fact, less popular in Pakistan than Osama bin Laden, which is mildly concerning for the world.
Oh, dear, that's not a good poll. It's hard to spin your way out of that one.
But to me, John, Pervez Musharraf will always be remembered as the man who presided over the last 9 years of Pakistani history, which has been a very disappointing era for Pakistani crickets.
Oh, God, here we go.
They've just lacked the consistency they had in the 90s, and history will judge Musharraf harshly for his failure to replace Wasim Akram and Waqar Yunus in the fast bowling department. But that's just the way I look at history.
No one could deny your use of cricket as a political anaesthetic, Andy. Make you completely immune from the most desperate of international situations.
Conventions preview now, and well, it's all about to kick off big style, John, isn't it, in Denver. Who's going to win, Obama or Clinton? The world is on the edge of its seat, you know.
Well, I've heard
there's a lot of poisonous snakes in Denver and quite a lot of asteroids in the sky, so you never know, Hillary. Hang on to that last scintilla of hope.
That's right. You've got to remember with Hillary that, you know, that kind of confidence that she has cannot be taken away with something as trifling as the will of the people. And for the next 2 weeks, in fact, I'm going to be out at both the Democratic Convention in Denver and then the Republican Convention in St. Paul, Minneapolis. And I'll be reporting back on what is bound to be a completely soul-destroying experience, leaving me an empty, hollow shell of the man I am now. And I've looked at the programme for Denver, Andy, and there's certainly a lot to look forward to over the coming week. First, the convention will be taking place in the Pepsi Centre, the address of which is 1000 Chopper Circle, which is a phenomenal address. Absolutely phenomenal.
I went to school with a boy called Chopper Circle.
Did you?
No.
It's also home to the Denver Nuggets, the Colorado Avalanche, the Colorado Crush, and the Colorado Mammoth. And now we'll host the volcano of democracy that is the Democratic Party's annual shindig. It's going to be a democracy Narnia.
But these rallies, that's a bit of a slip there. These conventions, John, are basically Nuremberg's with a forced smile, aren't they? They're kind of a cross between a fascist rally and a children's game show.
Oh, come on. There's so much to look forward to there. There's going to be evidently eco-friendly convention merchandise in Denver, such as organic clothing and recycled frisbees. In fact, what would you like me to bring back for you, Andy? What souvenir would you like me to bring back?
Bring me the head of... I don't know any Democrats, John. I'll get it brutally honest. Who's where's Newt Gingrich from? Is he still knocking around? Or is he on the other side?
He is very much on the other side, Andy.
Well, bring me his head. I don't care where you get it from. I want the head of Newt Gingrich. He's got lots of heads, Gingrich, so you should be able to get one of them.
I'll try and bring back as much tat as possible, and we can even have a bugle competition so that some poor bugle listener can get the biggest pile of freebies thrown out by the Republicans and the Democrats you've ever seen.
What about Mike Gravel? Will he be there?
I'll try and get you Mike Gravel's autograph, Andy.
Try and get me Mike Gravel, John. I think that would be a great prize. We'll set a question next week, and if you get the question right, the first bugle listener to get the question right wins Mike Gravel for a month.
Yeah. Okay, that's a guarantee. That's an internet guarantee.
But you have to take him for a walk to a lake every day so we can throw a stone in.
There's so much to look forward to, Andy. Balloons, you know, I'm a huge balloon fan, and there's going to be literally tens of hundreds of them there. Also, I'm looking forward to being looked at with a mixture of intrigue and contempt. Very much looking forward to that. And all your favourite speakers are going to be there, Andy. AFT President Randy Weingarten, Miami Mayor Manny Diaz, former Indiana Representative Lee Hamilton. All your favourites, Andy.
Oh, right. I'd love to see Weingarten live. I've really only seen this stuff on DVD.
And there's also, Andy, a concert scheduled by the Black Eyed Peas. And, in your honour, I'll request my humps. I'll call you and I'll hold up the phone so you can see them tear through that live. Because my humps, of course, is a very dense political analogy. That's why they're playing.
For those of you looking for omens for how the election might go, the last time the Democratic Convention was held in Denver was in 1908. And the Democrats, of course, lost to, can you guess? Yes, it was the Republicans. And Big Billy Taft. So it looks like the Republicans will definitely win the election this year because of the Democrats holding their convention in Denver. But also, the last time the Republicans held their convention in Minneapolis in 1892, they lost also to their old rivals, the Democrats. So all signs point to a Democratic win in November. So all in all, it does seem that omens based on when parties last held conventions in the place they're holding them this time around has no real impact on actual political events, for which I am truly thankful. However, for those of you looking for omens in other areas of the world, the US men's 4x100m relay team have failed to make the Olympic final for the first time since 1988, when, of course, Republican George Bush Sr. won, so that's good news for McCain. But then, straight after that race, the US women's 4x100m relay team also dropped their baton, and that's the first time they've not been in the final since 1948, when, of course, the Democrats with Harry S. Truman took home the White House cake. So that's a big boost for Obama there. So all in all, John, it seems that omens taken from whether or not America reaches the final of the Olympic 4x100m relays really doesn't have any great impacts on actual political events, for which I am truly sorry.
Andy, that was an almost heroic amount of bullshit.
That was all fact. That was all fact. It might have been bullshit, but it was factual bullshit.
And now, you know what that music means. You know who is on his way. Please, be upstanding, put your right hand on your chest, and let a single tear spill down your cheek as an eagle perches upon your shoulder and shits out a red, white, and blue solid piece of gold. It's the American!
Hey, everybody, how you doing?
Hi, American.
Now, hello, American. Very exciting for the Bugle. The American we have sent to Beijing.
That's right.
You're in Beijing. Hello. What is hello in Chinese?
Not 100%, but everyone here keeps saying mi hao. Mi hao. So what I do, I go like this. Mi, how you doing? Huh?
How do they react to that?
Not one laugh. These people here have absolutely no sense of humor. Not a funny nation over here.
How is it over in Beijing at the moment? Are you having a good time?
I'll be quite honest. I'm unimpressed. I'm ready to get back.
You're unimpressed with Beijing. The city just hasn't impressed you in any way.
Well, I mean, you know, you go to the things that they say are great, like I saw the Great Wall of China.
Yeah.
And I'm going, oh, yeah, okay, so it's a wall. What do you want me to do about it? You know?
They don't want you to do anything about it. They want you to appreciate the incredible craftsmanship that went into it years and years ago.
When I think about the things I deal with every day back home, like I have something in my car called Easy Pass, right? I don't even have to pay for a toll booth. I just drive right through and it's automatic. I mean, that's a lot more impressive to me than some big old wall.
No, that's not as impressive. That's not the same thing at all. That's less impressive than the Great Wall of China.
I don't know, man. I mean, it's pretty cool. There's no traffic, nothing. You just zip right through. Going across the GW Bridge, you kidding me?
What, do you think we should get some Chinese tourists to enjoy that, just to stand by and take pictures of
it? You know, as things progress, you should move forward. A big old wall, I don't know what that really does for your country. I mean, like, in other words, if we wanted to attack China, we could just fly over that. It's dated technology.
I suppose that is fair. It's not the defense it once was. I'll give you that.
Well, this is what weirds me out about being over here. There's a guy, the best men's trampoline guy in China.
Yeah.
His name Dong Dong. Okay? I know for a fact that there's no one on the American team for any sport whose name in Chinese means penis, penis. I know for a fact. I feel like the first thing you do when you're naming your kid is you look up at a book. Does my kid's name mean penis? But the cool thing is I'm 12 hours ahead of everybody at home, so I've been giving everybody the lotto numbers and stuff, you know what I mean?
Spoiler alert. Don't tell us what happens over the next 12 hours.
Yeah, well, I'm kind of in the future, so I know already who won the election and stuff. It's pretty cool.
So you've been out there watching the Olympics as well. I mean, have you been enjoying that?
The best. It is the best. You know, I'll tell you why the Olympics is so great, because America is number one at everything, and
Hold on.
That's something. That is to me what the world should realize after these Olympics, that we still got it and we're still number one. We're the best.
But I think that's the opposite of what the world is realizing, isn't it? I think people are realizing that China is number one and China is the best.
Not really. I think most people are realizing we're still the best and that being American is the best. And if the world wants to be anything, they should be just like us because we win everything.
To make Britain the third greatest country in the world, according to the Olympic medal table. So I guess that's something for us to cling to.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like you guys haven't really won that much stuff, though, right? Except, like, rowing or something. I don't know.
Whoa. Britain's doing extremely well. We're third in the overall medal table, and that's what happens if you top-load the Olympics with sailing and cycling. We'll crush you at those.
Yeah, all right. I don't know. All I know is we're number one, and we're the best, and the world knows we're the best, and that's why it's good. It's a perfect time to have the Olympics, because it felt at some point like there was some doubts around the world about who's the best, and now everyone knows the best is us still, and stop asking.
So, the great American hero of this Olympics has been the swimmer Michael Phelps. Have you met him out in Beijing?
Well, I haven't met him, but I saw one of his races, and yeah. I could tell you this. You know, I've been in America. I've traveled a little bit, and I've been to SeaWorld, and I've seen things. I've seen whales and dolphins and things, and I could tell you it's that good. And I was actually tempted to throw a beach ball in there and see if he'd knock it up with his nose. I'm telling you, this guy is part. He's got to be part something. I'd check for gills if I were you. You know what I mean, this guy?
Are you seriously saying that Michael Phelps is as good as SeaWorld?
The difference with SeaWorld is, you know, there's better snacks and stuff just because it's America.
Yeah.
But,
I mean, is there not an argument that, in fact, Michael Phelps is British in a way? I mean, if you, like me, don't recognise American independence, then he's in fact, the second greatest British swimmer that's ever lived.
Yeah, well, I can tell you something, actually, along those lines, and I see what you're trying to do, and I don't appreciate it. I can tell you this. What's great about our country, this is truly what's great, is whatever athlete is the best at whatever they do from whatever country, we just take them, and then they become American. I mean, some of our best gymnasts are Russian or Chinese. I mean, our coach, we got a nutty coach named Bella, Russian guy. And, I mean,
That's not his name.
Something like that, but he's Russian, but he's American. I mean, it's brilliant. In 2012, you're going to see a lot of those really good 10-year-old girls who are on the gymnastics team. You'll see them on the American team.
Is that how you regard the Olympics then? It's like a big shopping mall from which
a shopping mall, exactly. You know, it's like, to me, the Olympics is, for everyone else, is like tryouts to be on our team.
I mean, this is your first time ever leaving America. I mean, how have you found being away?
Yeah, I'll put it to you this way. I'm ready to come home, and I'm not going to really be traveling much anymore. I actually threw away my passport out here just because I decided I don't want to do it anymore. Well, I don't want to travel.
Well, I mean, I understand that, but that means you're going to need that passport to get back into America. That was a mistake.
No, I'm an American, and they'll let me back in. Believe me, I won't need it.
Well, you sound really confident, but they are going to want to see your passport.
I doubt it. I'm sure they'd be, what are they going to do, tell me I'm not American? You know what I mean? Give me a test. It's fine. Okay.
What test would that involve?
I don't know. Some kind of patriotic exam. I mean, I don't know. I don't need to study. Just give it to me. Yeah, I mean, you know, I have my driver's license. It says, you know, New Jersey on it. No problem. I'm in.
Well, I'm glad that you're so confident. I mean, I worry you are going to struggle at U.S. immigration, but, you know...
You cannot fake a New Jersey driver's license. The technology that they use to create that driver's license is so advanced, it cannot be fraudulent.
Well, good luck coming back, American. I mean, hopefully you get back to the land of the free and the home of the... What was it?
You know what it is. It's brave.
It's the brave. Okay. Well, thanks very much, American, and we'll speak to you again.
Thank you.
Yeah. Ni hao.
How you doing?
Bugle GCSE results section now, and 16-year-old British Bugle listeners, of which there must be at least, I would imagine, 1.2 million, have this week been receiving their exam results. I think it's only right, John, that we should give them some advice, given that we are now men of the world who've been through this traumatic process. So if you failed all of your exams, we suggest that you press stop on whatever music device you're listening to this on. You've probably downloaded the wrong thing. However, if you're slightly disappointed by your results, don't worry. No one will remember your exams in the future, because in about 200 years' time, everyone involved will be dead. And remember, it's what you do in later life that people remember you for. No one remembers that Stalin failed his poetry exam, or that Hitler had to sit 6 retakes in religious studies because he kept misspelling Deuteronomy. Okay, those are 2 bad examples, but the point stands. And if you've got straight A's, then, well, the world is your oyster. So treat yourself, take your foot off the gas and coast for the next 10 years. You've earned it. Then when you suddenly realise that life is passing you by, panic and become a criminal mastermind. Good pay if you work hard at it. Flexible hours requires all-round skills and nerve under pressure. Plus, if you can answer this exam-related question, then, courtesy of the Bugle, you can win a free career as a sous chef in a mobile nacho van, a mercenary in a brutal drug war, or a freelance professional lepidopterist. Those butterflies aren't going to pin themselves to a piece of cardboard. And the question is, how many GCSEs did top British science whiz Isaac Newton pass?
I'm not sure people should be taking careers advice from you, Andy. You got a degree in classics,
yep,
which is completely useless. I mean, what were you going to become? Ancient Greek? That's a very competitive position.
Well, I was hoping that I might turn into Zeus. Just a great way to meet girls. Your emails now, and this week this section is dedicated to all you heroic Bugle listeners who attempted to update the Bugle Wikipedia page with lies, as we exhorted you to do last week. We got a quite fantastic response. So fantastic, in fact, that Wikipedia locked down the Bugle page on its site, which I thought was a little humorless of them. And a little lacking in self-awareness, I think. They should be proud of how mendacious their site is.
It was an incredible response, Andy, yet shut down by the administrators. Tremendous work to everyone involved. This is the best kind of civil disobedience. It was infantile, it was imaginative, and hardly anyone noticed. We can all be truly proud of ourselves.
It beats sitting with your legs crossed and setting yourself on fire any day of the decade.
Before it was all pulled down... like an ornate sandcastle, I managed to look through it, and asking what your favourite bit in is like saying, what's your favourite brick in the Great Wall of China? They're all absolutely incredible. My favourite lie was this, Andy. John Oliver is the highest mountain in the Southern Hemisphere with an average rainfall of 450 millimetres, brackets 17.7 inches. So exact, it seems like a fact.
So next week, we will have a special feature section on the Bugle Wikipedia page, as modified by you, our Bugle listeners. So thanks to everyone who has contributed to that, and we'll update
you next
week.
Thank you so much. It was truly inspirational work.
So thanks for all your other emails. We'll have lots of emails next week, but we're running out of time this week because I've got to go and do a show in a couple of minutes. But do keep them flooding in to the Bugle at timesonline.co.uk. Sport now, and, well, the Olympics, John. It is the only sport going on in the world, really, for the next few days, till the Bugle comes out on Monday, when life will return to normal. The highlights, of course, have been Jamaican sprinter Usain Bolt, who has tested positive for being fast. What a fast man, John. You can say a lot of things about Usain Bolt. You can say that he's never played cribbage on a Soviet space mission. You could say that he couldn't fake a Rembrandt convincingly, even if you gave him a really good paintbrush. And you can say that he will never be the father of actress Bridget Fonda. Those are all legitimate criticisms. But you cannot say that Usain Bolt is not a fast man. In fact, even when he's not moving fast, you will still always believe that it's necessary. He could move fast within
That's
a few
right.
seconds. That is the mark That's of right. a truly fast man, John.
Bolt was criticised a little bit for showboating at the end of both his 100 and 200 metre races. But Andy, he should be... I love showboating. It's great for the sport. He should have something on the back of his vest just saying, I'm faster than you, so that his opponents can see it getting smaller and smaller in the distance. He should have turned round and moonwalked over the finish line. Or he should have finished, got changed into a dinner suit and greeted each opponent over the line with a handshake and a cool drink before starting to sign autographs on all their faces saying, you're welcome, and who shall I make it out to?
But what I was most impressed with was Bolt's preparation, which involved basically eating chicken nuggets at regular intervals, an interesting new development in sports science and physiology. Although, of course, ancient Greek athletes did used to eat sheep's testicles to make themselves run faster, so essentially the ingredients were basically the same. And how must his opponents feel, John? I guess, like a decent quality Jerusalem-based magician must have felt almost 2,000 years ago when Jesus started wowing the crowds. Hey, I can make a handkerchief turn into a ferret. Not enough, moustache man. This beardy guy can make lepers play baseball. Or maybe he felt like a six-year-old kid in an 18th century Austrian talent competition, whose ability to juggle three live guinea pigs whilst belching the Russian national anthem, while still impressive, was somewhat put in the shade when little Wolfgang Mozart started banging out his tunes on the piano. And of course, there's been wonderful British success, John. This country is suffused with a golden glow. 18 gold and counting, a lot of them in swimming, sailing and rowing, proving that Britannia does still rule the waves. And that we can still go on those waves, rule them, and then come home with a load of gold from a distant land. The good old days are back.
That's why we're so good at it. You know, we're an island. Rowing and sailing and canoeing, it's basically self-defence. That's why we're good at cycling as well, because maybe in our future wars we'll just cycle really fast around an army until they get dizzy and fall over. Then we'll just canoe over the top of them.
The one black spot in the Olympics, though, was horses failing drugs tests. This was a real letdown, John, from our horsey friends. They've really let the whole world down.
They're no friends of mine, Andy.
Oh, they're glory hunters, aren't they, these horses? You know, they see their chance of glory in a big advertising contract and they just do anything to get it. And they're so monosyllabic in press conferences. That's a dead giveaway. It's like Ben Johnson all over again.
I just feel sorry for the completely innocent jockeys here, Andy, because they didn't deserve this. They've competed fairly and all of a sudden these horses just piss it up a wall. It's so sad.
Well, that's all we've got time for on this week's Bugle. Thanks for listening. A quick Bugle forecast now for the next week. John, the forecast this week is on the extent of placard waving at the Democratic Convention. I'm going to go for a score of 72.4 Goebbelses on the scale of orchestrated overexcitement. I think it could be a good one. Yeah,
just the 72. I think they may get into the low 80s, Andy. There's going to be a lot of pro-life nutcases out there as well. So, yeah, I think they could really push it up.
Well, let's see. We'll report back next week when John will be in Denver and I will be in London. So thanks very much for listening. Keep your emails coming to us, thebugle@timesonline.co.uk, and keep trying to change Wikipedia.
Bye!
Bye-bye, everyone! Bye!
Bye-bye!
It's showtime.
This is a Times Online podcast. For more podcasts, go to timesonline.co.uk/podcasts.